This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
In a couple minutes on the Maple Toyota Hotline, Mark Tewksbury is going to be joining us right here on Overdrive. You're listening to the show on TSN 1050 or on the TSN Go app. I'm Matt Cause. That is Derek Taylor. Derek, before Tewksbury joins us, people have been enjoying the summer lists. People have been sending in their picks for what movies remind you most of summer. And we've had a lot from Meatballs, which was your number four choice.
Correct.
Is it bad of me that I'm not a huge fan of Meatballs?
Absolutely.
All right.
I'm a huge fan. My wife was, it's her favorite movie of all time, so I've become a huge fan.
Okay.
Plus, it was shot in Ontario.
I don't care. A lot of horrible movies shot in Ontario.
Doesn't care about
Saw
Ontario.
Saw 2. The sequel to Saw was shot in Toronto. That movie was horrible. First one was great. Second one was horrible.
Fourth one was really, oof.
Fourth one got better. One guy writes in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Nice.
That's the movie that reminds them of summer. I like this one. Pulp Fiction. I don't know. Pulp Fiction came out in winter. I don't think it did. And I'm trying to remember.
It probably came out closer to get Oscar consideration.
Yeah. Superbad, Rushmore, Happy Gilmore.
Superbad is a decent call, yeah.
Rushmore, by the way, top five movie for me for all times. My fantasy team is often Max Fisher Productions. That's often the name I use.
I don't connect that one to summer.
I don't either.
It's tremendous, but I don't connect it to summertime.
Your number three movie that reminds you of summer.
Major League.
Great choice.
Love that film. Ricky Wilde thing. But we wear caps and sleeves in this league, son.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God. So amazing.
I remember watching that in the movie theater and just dying with laughter.
Yeah.
And how many times now when you say, just a bit outside.
Tried the corner and missed. Yeah. Ball 4, ball 8, ball 12, and the bases are loaded. Yeah. Dynamite drop in, Marty. Those broadcasting lessons are really paying off. Up your butt, Joe Boo. There's just a million.
Yes.
I got a guy about some white walls on the other line. I'll get back to you about managing the Cleveland Indians.
Yep.
Amazing.
It was. That's a great choice. A great choice. My number three, this is the most obvious one. Because this is considered the first ever summer blockbuster. But from 1977, just when you thought it was safe to go in the water, got to be Jaws. And to me, Jaws is one of the perfect movies. There's nothing I would change about it. I can watch that 100 times. Almost every scene, you can just deconstruct the brilliance of it. It's one of the greatest movies of all time. So for me, number three about movies when I think about summer, it's got to be Jaws.
That is number two on my list of movies I have never seen.
You have never seen Jaws.
Movies in 40 years, really, they lose a lot. So I feel like now it just wouldn't be...
No, Jaws still works today.
Same.
No, it would. Jaws still works.
Really, in a post-Blair Witch world, it would work the same?
It is 100%.
I'd still be as afraid?
Yes. 100%.
I don't know.
I will sometimes still swim in my, in a freshwater lake, and I will get scared that that Jaws is going to attack me. Adrian, can we get a poll going? And this is a simple one. Is it shameful, and include his Twitter account, is it shameful that at DT on SC has not seen Jaws? Is that shameful? I'm judging and shaming you. I'm going full cyberbully on you right
Maybe
now.
Maybe I had good parents who didn't want me to see scary movies when I was young.
It got in the high 90s on Rotten Tomatoes. The movie's brilliant. Here's the thing. It's not gory. You don't see the shark. The great thing about it is a slow burn. There is so much foreplay before you get to the action in Jaws. You got Roy Scheider at his absolute best. Richard Dreyfuss. This is an absolute brilliant movie. You've never seen Jaws.
No, but I saw the Blair Witch Project, so I feel like I've seen all foreplay and no release. I think I've been there.
And there you are at the end, just standing in the corner, staring.
James Caan said watch Jaws before you go out with Fergie. God, what a great story.
We will do our number two and our number one in terms of movies that remind or just make us think about summer.
Number two, if you do not have it on your list, I will judge you. I'm just saying. If you don't have my number two on your list,
I probably at least have seen it. And one person
If you haven't, then you and I are not friends.
Yeah. One person writes in, Brad McDonald, Die Hard. Listen, I love Die Hard. It is a great movie.
That's Christmas, though.
But it's a Christmas movie.
That's all Christmas.
That is a top five Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, it is Mark Tewksbury, who is board of directors for the Special Olympics. Of course, you know him for winning multiple medals in the Olympics. He's won 3 Olympic swimming medals from 88 and 92. He was the honorary coach for Canada at the 2015 Special Olympics World Summer Games. Mark, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
My pleasure.
Mark, I don't know if you got a chance to, did you get a chance to watch the ESPYs last night?
I sure did. I sure saw the tribute to Eunice Shriver Kennedy. It was amazing.
Actually, you know what? We'll play again for the audience that didn't get a chance to listen to it. This is from last night. This is Michelle Obama, and in her speech, honoring the founder of the Special Olympics. Have a quick listen to this.
She knew that when we give others a chance to fulfill their greatest potential, we all win. So nearly 50 years ago, she created the Special Olympics. And over the course of her life, she turned that visionary idea into a worldwide movement with competitions across the globe. Through her passionate service, she made our world more welcoming, inclusive, and fair, not just for the athletes she empowered, but for us all.
Just wanted your thoughts, if you expand a little bit, just what that meant for you as someone who's been a part and has worked with the Special Olympics for decades and decades.
Well, first of all, beautifully said.
Yep.
And said by Michelle Obama, which is pretty amazing. I think, of course, you know, Eunice Shriver and some other really incredible people, including our own Dr. Frank Hayden, who is really back at the beginning of this movement, had this brilliant idea somehow that sport really could transform people with intellectual disabilities' lives by giving them a sense of community, sense of self-worth, participation. And if you give that opportunity to people, they bring out the best, and they bring out the best in you. And I tell you, when you get involved with this organization, once you see the athletes, it's just impossible not to stay, because it's just the spirit of sport. It's really nice to see this recognized.
What's the greatest effect, and if you can pick one, of the Special Olympics on the 4.2 million athletes that compete, on disabled people, intellectually disabled people as a whole, or on people who are not intellectually disabled? Who does it best impact?
No, I know. It's because it really is symbiotic. You know, it's a total win-win, and I guess it's humanity. It touches something in people. When we go down and have a games experience and take pretty high-ranking business people down to see a Special Olympics, national games, provincial games, world games, it's very humbling. It's very, you know, it's inspiring. It's quite something to see where participation is really recognized and appreciated, and people celebrate each other, and it's really infectious, that kind of environment. So for sure, the athletes benefit from, you know, the sport, but they create this incredible environment that if you're there, you just can't help but be impacted by.
Well, because I will never know what it would be like to live with, say, autism or any other intellectual disability, but when you see someone who loves sports as much as I do or more than I do, there's instantly a bond there.
Totally. And you see somebody giving it sometimes, like 1,000%. You're like, wow. You know, you know that experience. You may not have the intellectual disability, but you know the kind of passion and dedication it takes to throw yourself into a sport like that.
Well, because nobody gets there for free, right? This is the Special Olympics, and the Olympics are, like, that's not a casually thrown around word.
Well, like the Olympics, it's a long-term athlete development program. So Special Olympics programs actually happen 365 days a year all over the country, communities across the country. And from ages as young as 2, believe it or not, in the early active program, all the way up to, yes, where just like in traditional sport, some people reach the Olympic Games, some people reach the Special Olympics World Games. But as a movement, it's very participatory.
How different is Special Olympics Canada? It was founded in 1969. How different is it today versus when you started to get involved? And I believe that was almost 30 years ago when you first started to get involved with the Special Olympics, Mark. What are the biggest differences?
It's a great question, actually. Well, we're on the cusp of a 50th anniversary of the Special Olympics movement worldwide, and Canada's, the movement worldwide in Canada is right behind it. So for us, you know, I think the biggest thing that's, I guess, at this point of self-reflection is, how far the movement has come and, you know, the growth of athletes and volunteers across the country, 40,000 plus people in Canada, is, you know, really significant, and the delivery of programs and standard of professionalism, et cetera. But I think looking to the future, it's also understanding that, wow, there's a lot to learn from that environment that is created when this community comes to participate in sport. And we talked about that earlier. And just that whole impact on these issues of inclusion and diversity in our humanity and, you know, real issues that the world is having to contemplate these days.
In a lot of ways, the biggest thing that Special Olympics can do, beyond giving opportunities to people that might not have it, but it's an infusion of empathy on the majority of people that do not, you know, that come from a different background.
Absolutely. And what's great is it's done from a place of inspiration. It's empathizing with people because actually they lift you up. It's not from a place of, you know, oh, poor you, and sympathy. And, you know, it's a really incredible perspective to be doing it from. And I think that's really where it gets super special.
Where would you like to see Special Olympics Canada in 10 years from now?
Yeah, nice light questions, guys. Thanks a lot. Yeah, sure.
Okay, hold on. Wait. No, I'm going to go another way. I want to hear, tell me one of your favorite stories from back in 2015. Just like either, you know, a joyous victory or the other side, someone just so pissed off that they lost. I want to hear, what are one or two of your favorite stories from the 2015 Special Olympics World Summer Games? You're right. That question was too heavy.
I love you guys.
Let's have fun.
I could have gone there. I was actually going to go there, but thank you. I will take the exit. I greatly appreciate it.
No. You know what? But you know what? Bad host by me. Good on you. No, tell stories. That's what we brought you here. Stories.
I love you. Thank you. So a couple things. You know, at the powerlifting venue, there was a girl from India that must have weighed 89 pounds that lifted, it looked like maybe 60, but it was the biggest weight looking thing you've ever seen.
Oh,
and we
God.
All screamed and whooped and, you know, hollered for her. And then Jackie Barrett, the Canadian, broke every record imaginable, and it was like being at an Olympic final the next day there at the same venue. And it, you know, both of those things struck me, you know, again, that participatory nature of having this young woman from India, and then Jackie, who's like basically breaking records, Canadian or provincial records, as he's performing at Special Olympics. So that range of experience. But, you know, I also love the athlete that was running the 10K that was a couple laps behind, but every time he ran past that grandstand, his arms were in the air and he was given it and everybody cheered. I thought, you know, there's something to be learned from this.
No, absolutely, because, I mean, that's just pure joy at its most. And we'll stick to this. You know what? This is much better. Mark Tewksbury, storyteller, way better than let's look into the future, because then we get into sponsorship and boring stuff like that. One thing you mentioned, but the great thing about the Special Olympics is it's not a, oh, look at you, or, you know, this sort of patronizing, condescending. You just treat them like athletes. And something that people don't realize is the other side, is for some people who lose, it's not, hey, we're all a bunch of winners. A lot of the athletes that are part of this, they're just as pissed off when they don't win as anyone else.
Hey, listen, Special Olympics athletes are human beings. They have a full range of emotions. And absolutely, there can be some really frustrated people. I gave out medals at the Worlds at LA, and they brought out the top five, and so the fifth place person from France was so angry. She just was not having it. She wouldn't wave. She wouldn't look at me. She just was not having it. So absolutely, you can get a range of responses, of course. People care.
Yes, that's exactly it. I want someone to have the same look as that weird look we saw on Phelps's face when he was sitting before one of the races with the hoodie on. I want to see that level of anger. Hey, Mark, thank you so much for joining us. Again, it was founded in 1969, and I think there's over 37,000 athletes, and almost as important, 17,000 volunteers, over 13,000 coaches. Thank you so much for the part that you have played in such an important part of this country.
And thanks to TSN, hey, my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. That is Mark Tewksbury. And yeah, much better job there. The story of a, 80-pound, Indian athlete trying to lift something her own weight. That would have been great to see. That would have been fantastic.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah. So, and again, if you haven't had a chance to check it out, it'll be all over the ESPYs. And just, it was just a really nice piece on Eunice Kennedy Shriver and the work that the work that she did founding and starting the summer or the Special Olympics. Mark Tewksbury, by the way, joined us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are on now with 0% financing and lease rates on the Toyota Corolla and RAV4. Visit mapletoyota.ca.
Can we just do it while people are alive? Can we just please do it while people are alive?
Mm-hmm.
Nelson Mandela in 2009 won the ESPY Award. Yeah, absolutely. The people on the list that they give the Arthur Ashe Courage Award to are tremendous. When you look through it, and I mean, we talked yesterday about Jim Valvano and the just incredible story he is. Steve Palermo, the umpire who got shot trying to break up a robbery and was paralyzed. And then Howard Cosell, Muhammad Ali, Billie Jean King, Pat Tillman. Come on, Pat freaking Tillman.
Can I bring up one that wasn't brought up before we go to break?
Hit me.
William David Sanders.
Help me out.
And I remember watching this. He was a teacher at Columbine.
Right.
And I remember I was at my girlfriend's place and where the mom and dad were watching this feature. And just, by the end, everyone's in tears. And this teacher, when the shooting started, when those two students went in to massacre the school, he ran in to the cafeteria. And he did everything he could to make sure that every student got out. And he knew what was behind him. It was two kids with machine guns. And he stayed there. And he did everything again to get as many of those kids out before he was murdered. And, I remember watching that and just being in absolute tears because of the heroism. So that's one that I always think of.
And people like that are why the 2015 one was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah.
We just jumped on Caitlyn Jenner when Lauryn Hill... They adjusted the basketball season so that this girl with a brain tumor could play college basketball.
Yeah.
She stuck it out. Like, she fought to stay alive to play her first college basketball game. And they give it to... those are the people. Those are the people right there that need to be honored and given love.
That was shameful of ESPN. That was more about ratings and about creating a story because Caitlyn Jenner was the story then versus more on merit. And I bet some people are absolutely green, and there's some people that are going to be very angry at that. Jim Popp will join us in a little bit on the show, and when we come back, we're going to get back to we're going to do our top three. We've done our top three. We'll do our top two list.
Let's recap our whole thing and go 5-1.
Yeah, we'll do 5-1 of our top movies that remind us of summer. That's Derek Taylor. I'm Matt Cause. We will reveal our top two choices coming up next right here on Overdrive. Question for you, Derek Taylor.
Hit me.
Do you think Jim Popp will be honest when I ask him the question? Did you expect this out of S.J. Green this early?
I think he will, and I think he'll say no. Because S.J. Green did not look like this in Montreal.
No.
S.J. Green was an 1,100-some-odd yard receiver a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Did not look like this.
No, and just do the math. 32 years old. He had to repair all three, the ACL, MCL, PCL, had a meniscus of the right knee. To be able to come back from all of that after missing essentially an entire year, being in your early 30s, about 7,000 yards receiving, you've won a couple of Grey Cups, you've been nominated, an All-Star many times. I don't think anyone would have been, shocked if he just rode into the sunset. But, he's come back and through three games has looked fantastic for the Argonauts and has been one of the more interesting stories so far in a CFL season where through 3 weeks, the starting quarterback for each team has not missed a game. And we haven't had
That's
that.
Right.
We have not had that in the last 5 years. At some point through the first three games, some starting quarterback has been injured. We've not had that yet.
The only thing keeping it from being a perfect season is where Chris Jones lost his brain and put Brandon Bridge in the red zone for two passes, which were both incomplete. So super thinking on that one.
If Hamilton had beaten Saskatchewan, Chris Jones, he would be on the hot seat. This is Overdrive. I'm Matt Cause. That's Derek Taylor filling in for Brian Hayes, Jamie McLennan, and, of course, Jeff O'Neill. So we'll talk to Jim Popp in a couple minutes. But I figured we need to get our top two list. And for people that are just tuning in, Anand Virk was on with us, one of the great baseball minds for ESPN. He also has a great film podcast called Cinephile. And a question I was thinking of this morning is, what are movies that just make you think of summer? Whether it's movies you saw as a kid, movies that are summer blockbusters, movies that take place in summer, however you want to do it.
Yeah.
Fully inclusive list. My 5 through 3, number 5, Summer School, great comedy from 1987. Number 4 was Terminator 2, because that movie in the summer blew me away. Me and my friends saw it, and it was one of those movies, we were on the bus coming back from Sherway Gardens, taking the bus back us to our home in Etobicoke. And we were our minds were blown. Just like, how the hell did any of that actually happen? Because the effects are so cool. And number 3, Jaws, an absolutely perfect movie where Buffalo Phil says you need to be shot out into the moon by the fact that you have not seen that movie. Derek, your 5 through 3 so far.
Number 5, What About Bob?
Yep.
Bill Murray, Richard Dreyfuss, outstanding. Number 4, Meatballs.
More Bill Murray.
Meatballs! Number 3, Major League.
Yes, great
epic
choice.
Epic sports film.
Your number... Which
leads me to my number 2 summer movie of all time.
Yep.
And like I said, if it's not on your list, I'm going to shame you. And if you've never seen it, we are not friends.
By the way, before you continue, you can't shame me because my 2 and 1 are brilliant. But go ahead.
But this one not appearing on your list would be a sin. Number 2... American Pie.
It's not on my list, but it's a great movie. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, you've seen it. Okay, we're still friends.
Of course I've seen it.
Yes, intercourse with a pie. That's amazing.
This coming from the person, by the way, whose favorite moment of the ESPYs was Peyton Manning saying anus on three times.
Three times he said anus.
All right.
American Pie, like I was a little older than, you know, the kids of American Pie, but you remember that weird, awkward phase and the pie scene and everything with Stifler and Ostrichers, you know, he's trying to get the girl, but he's a cool athlete, but he's super awkward with the with the weird girl. Ah, it's just an epic film.
My number 2 is a little bit more serious. Stand By Me.
I figured that was coming, yep.
It's a movie about just a bunch of kids right before they're entering high school. And, I mean, you know, the plot is them going to see a dead body, but the movie is really about them growing up and eventually ending that phase of your life when you are just innocent and you're a kid and you're starting to enter in the next phase. And the final scene when they're in the town coming back on their adventures and they're all going off their separate ways and, you know, the Stand By Me song is starting to go in the background, it just always gets me emotionally. To me, when I think of summer, because that's where their final summer adventure, Stand By Me at number 2.
I like it.
Number 1 for you.
Number 1. Hey, everybody, we're all going to get laid. Caddyshack. Boom. Caddyshack, number 1 summer movie for DT on SC.
I can't argue anything with that. It is a classic. I don't know if you could say the final line from the movie said by Rodney Dangerfield on air, but onwards and upwards. The great thing about that movie.
That is the ugliest hat I ever saw. Looks good on you, though.
Oh, that bad, you must get a free bowl of soup. You had, at the peak of their powers, Bill Murray, Chevy Chase. You had Rodney Dangerfield and Ted Knight.
Yep.
You had 4 fantastic comedic and serious actors in some cases as well at their peak. Caddyshack is a great movie.
With a bunch of kids who I don't know any of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. But you had those
Danny 4. Noonan.
Yeah, I have no idea who they are, and I don't think they ended up doing much after that. Please do correct me if I'm wrong. But yeah, it's so funny 37 years later, whatever it is.
My number 1?
Hit me.
And part of this
I know. Okay, I know what it's going to be.
Part of this is I saw this at like a little creaky movie theater in Bracebridge, Ontario. And this was from the 80s. And now, Derek, you're writing down what you think it is.
Yes.
Okay, so Derek just wrote on a piece of paper what he thinks my number 1 movie is.
We're not streaming today. We're not on TSN 2, but I have it right here in my
number 1 summer movie, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
and the envelope, please.
No!
Ferris Bueller. I knew it. Yeah. Ferris Bueller was so amazing.
Yes.
And still is to this day for, I don't know if it resonates with teens, but still.
Listen,
to this day.
Deadpool made paid homage to it at the end of the movie. I saw it in the summer in Bracebridge, so I have a connection there. But it's right near the end of the school year, and I know it's technically not fully in the summer. But when Ferris opens up the windows, looks outside, and says, "How can I possibly expect it to handle school in a day like this?" Very few clouds, a blue sky on the sort of weather that we never see in Toronto anymore.
That is true. Ferris Bueller, you're my hero.
Quick question.
Saves him from the pool.
Who was the protagonist in that movie? Was it Ferris or was it Cameron?
No, it was Ferris.
Because in movies, the idea of the protagonist is the character who undergoes some sort of change or transformation. Cameron definitely changes. Ferris is the same person from beginning to end. You can argue it's Cameron.
Okay, I could see that argument because Cameron, is willing to stand up to his father at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
How much better is that movie because Cameron's rocking a Gordie Howe Red Wings jersey throughout the whole thing?
8 to 13% better.
Oh, it's tremendous. I'm trying to think of the Sausage King of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Abe Froman.
Abe Froman. You're Abe Froman.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I am, sure.
Cousin Eddie writes in, never heard of any of these movies. I'm going to have to now block you troll. Someone else writing, good morning, Vietnam. Good choice as well.
Yep.
Got a lot of people tweeting in. Thank you so much for all your participation. Technical producer Mark Mullen, who's loving this list. Because I want to make sure you got time, because Jim Pop is joining us soon. Might want to get back, and we might get back into Josh Donaldson and the Blue Jays. Your list, your favorite movies that remind you of summer.
At number 5, I have Stand By Me.
Great choice.
At number 4, Caddyshack.
Yep.
Nice.
This is probably showing the age difference, though.
Yeah.
Number 3, Sandlot.
Okay, yep. Okay. A bunch of people at Sandlot.
Number 2, Dazed and Confused.
Mm-hmm.
And number 1, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yes.
Okay.
By the way, a little trivia. The first time a young Matt Cause ever saw full frontal nudity was at Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Here's the sad thing.
Like someone breaking in the theater news. Was just this.
No, at home. My older brother was watching that movie, and I walked down into the rec room where him and his friend were watching it, and the Phoebe Kate scene getting out of the pool. Here's the sad thing. I forget the specific day of my dad's birthday, and he's 86. I've had many opportunities to remember it. But I remember exactly where I was when I saw that scene. So I don't know what that says about me. We get into the Argonauts taking on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers with one of the reasons why people have hope and faith in the Toronto Argonauts. Jim Popp, the general manager, one of the smartest men in the CFL. He'll be joining us next right here. Headline from the hockey news from Ken Campbell. Eroding relationship between NHL and players' union doesn't bode well for the next CBA. An agent says the Olympic decision has, quote, militarized players and coalesced players around union like never before. Now, again, the current CBA does not end until 2020. But if there's one thing I can tell you about Gary Bettman, that man loves a lockout. He loves shortened seasons. He loves shortened seasons. Or just every now and then, he's like, guys, hey, let's all take a year off. Let's not negotiate and get a deal done until we've lost the season and alienated fans.
Has Gary Bettman, in Gary Bettman's mind, ever been wrong about anything?
No. Gary Bettman...
That's what he always strikes me as well.
Seems like a real humble and swell fella. Joining us now, someone who has no reason at all to be humble. When you think of Executive of the Year, when you think of Grey Cup Championships, one of the top minds that will come, of course, is Jim Popp, the general manager of the Toronto Argonauts, and one of the reasons why people are excited about the Argonauts after a very poor season last year was the addition of Popp and Tressman. Well, the team is 2-1, and some good additions has certainly helped out. Jim, thanks so much for joining the show.
Pleasure to be on. Appreciate you having me on.
All right, Jim, I'm going to ask you for something that is rare in the world of sports, and I don't blame you for this, but honesty. All right?
You got it.
I'm going to ask you, it's a rarity from athletes, management, and everyone in between. Did you expect this sort of start from SJ Green?
Well, you know what? Didn't really have expectations, really. I guess the answer is no, because when we decided to trade for him, really what we looked at is hopefully having him healthy and ready to go by game seven. We figured he may have to 6-game injury and whatever portion he missed before we activated him. But by the time we did the trade, he told us he'd be ready and cleared by the middle of May. We're watching videos on the internet of him training. We thought there was a possibility, but we didn't know the reality to it. And by the time he got to camp, he was ready to go.
I mean, you must have sort of, like, here's the thing, is that when I heard about the signing, my expectation was, oh, okay, he'll chip in here or there, but his big role is going to be sort of as the mentor. And we've all wrote the stories about the veteran who's mentoring the young players. And that was sort of my expectation. And instead, you know, a 200-yard game, it's just been completely second in the league in receiving yards. It's made a lot of us look foolish, his production.
Well, what I figure he could do, if he had not regained his full speed or his ability to run as clean a route as he had been, I knew his catch radius would still be the same. I knew that he was so strong and physical, that would be the same. It might have been a more closer range to, you know, to Ricky Ray around the line of scrimmage, but I figured he'd be very productive in a short range. Wasn't sure long range, you know, down the field. And obviously, once we saw mini camp to training camp, we knew if he stayed healthy that we had a real chance, but we really honestly didn't know what we were going to get till game one because we never played him in a preseason game. He had not taken a hit other than little bumps here and there, and mentally didn't know where he was going to be. So I think game one really helped him when he made some acrobatic catches, took some shots, hopped up, and we see the SJ Green that we all know.
Jim, I just want to CFL numbers nerd out for just a second. SJ's last season in Montreal, his average target was about 11 yards downfield. This year, it's over 16, which if he keeps it up for the season, is going to be the deepest or second deepest in the league. Are you surprised by the way Ricky and I mean the offensive side are using SJ Green, or is this? I mean, did you expect this? Because this seems new to me.
Well, a lot of what happens, seriously, is how teams defend you. And I think a lot last year, teams really sat back and for the last few years in Montreal where teams just wanted you to dump and throw the ball short range and you didn't allow people to get downfield very often. I think more teams so far this year have come up, creeped up, and basically said, beat us downfield. They probably looked at the receiving corps, didn't know if they could beat them downfield. I think the comfort level is you know, once a quarterback like Ricky understands, I just got to throw it in a range of SJ Green. He's going to come up or at least get his hands on the ball and knock it down. And that comfort level has come fairly quickly to where he sees what he's capable of doing.
I started the season tracking contested catches where defensive backs are at least close enough to wave at the ball in front of a defender. It may not surprise you to know that nobody has more contested targets than SJ Green and nobody has more contested catches than him. He's special with a defender right on him, isn't he?
He is. He just has this innate ability. There's only so many people that have this ability to be able to truly judge whether, you know, it's like the basketball player that can take off running and jump straight up in the air. You know, he has that ability as a receiver to take off running, jump straight up in the air, twist and turn his body, use his hands, and take a shot. You know, he's such a strong man that he's able to control himself and take a shot and still hold on to the ball.
Jim, are you going to hire Derek Taylor by the end of this interview? Because he is charting tons of things. Maybe some things, maybe even in your own analytics. Will you hire Derek Taylor?
Well, you know what? He's doing such a great job for everybody that you get to throw those stats out. It was leaving where he is.
Good, good. Now. Stay away from him. We want him here at TSN.
I want to ask you just a question in my application for a job. With how much football you've seen and how many football plays you've seen, when SJ made those, he made three catches in that first game that I stood up and yelped a little bit. Do you yelp anymore when he pulls down that one-handed pass, or are you kind of, I've seen that a bunch of times?
You know what? It's so exciting. You grow to hope they can do it the next time. You know, you expect it, but will they hold on to it? I mean, you know, we saw that with Ben Cahoon for so many years, and then all of a sudden you have another one in SJ that's capable of doing it, and you have to marvel at it, how many times they actually come down with the ball. So, I mean, there's there's times when you don't think it's possible, and they just find a way to hold on to it and bring it in. But great hand-eye coordination, great body control, great strength, and just the inactability to just kind of give a little bump and shove there to create separation to get their hands on the ball before the defender.
Joined by Jim Popp, general manager of the Toronto Argonauts. I also did a little charting. It's not just about Derek Taylor over here. Wrote a column about SJ Green and went back and watched every one of his catches from the win against the Ottawa Redblacks. And one thing I noticed on the other side is just how brave Ricky Ray is, because he took a couple shots there, staying in the pocket a little, you know, that extra half second to allow the play to develop. If I'm looking at the Argonauts right now, I guess my main concern is keeping Ricky Ray healthy.
Oh, 100%. First of all, when you have a great quarterback receiver combination, and Ricky spreads the ball out everywhere, there's a lot on a quarterback standing in that pocket, being able to take a hit and then pop back up. And you don't want him to be able to take so many hits. Some of those hits are created by the length of time that he holds the ball in order to let the receiver get open and then put it in an area. The other part of it is our protection. And, you know, we said that from game one, two, and three. We've got to do a better job as a team of coming up with schemes and or doing a better job blocking. You know, whether it's not always the O-line. Sometimes it's a receiver. Sometimes it's a running back that's asked to block. Sometimes it's a quarterback holding on the ball too long. It's a combination of things, but we do have to do a better job of allowing our quarterback to get hit.
SJ's been great. Ricky's been great. To me, Jim, agree or disagree, Victor Butler has been a revelation for us as football fans, because he's been out of football for a year. When you came into the team, did you know what they already had in Victor Butler?
Not 100%. There's a lot of players I wasn't sure. But, you know, what was done and what was evaluated is Victor Butler could pass rush coming out of college. And he wasn't so much used in that form all the time in the NFL. You know, then he was sitting out. And then, you know, you have to study and come up with players like that you want to try to put back to something they naturally do. He was interested in that. He was given that opportunity. Now, once we got into training camp, it was instantly known this guy is going to be a starter. He even got dinged up and hurt a little bit in camp, missed time, but we already appointed him the starter because we saw that he was able to do it. We try to find versatile athletes that can either pass rush off the edge, step back, go to the second level. I mean, if we needed Victor to come back and play middle linebacker, he could, that type of athlete. But it's a credit to Corey Chamberlain and his coaching, you know, his defensive stat. It's a credit to the players around Victor, because they helped free him up to be able to allow him to do what he does best.
Seven quarterback sacks, by far the league leader. As I charted them, every one of them was a straight beat of an offensive lineman. There were no garbage sacks, so he's excited about it. I know Sean Lemon is excited about it because he feels there's going to be time for some lemon drops that coming across as well, just working with a guy like that. Can I'm just going to nerd out just a little bit. You guys, in the first game, I had you not missing a single tackle, and I have you being the best tackling team in the CFL. And that's not sexy, but it just seems like that is so valuable to be. I have a receiver. He doesn't get 20 yards after the catch because we bring him down so fast.
Well, I tell you what, I when you take one of the leaders right now, like Bear Woods, that Bear prides himself on that. He studies film hard, and as a leader in that group, they all pride themselves. But again, I will say that starts with Corey Chamberlain, teaching and technique, all the staff. You know, on the defense, starts with Coach Tressman seeing these guys, but they're real teachers. You know, we're going to do this. We're going to play the game right. We're going to be sound fundamentally. And then the results come out with that. Now, that's a heck of a stat right there. But I do know these guys really pride themselves. And every game's different. You're going to have challenges. You're not going to be great every game. But they are a group that really, and not just the defense, but the entire team, that stick together. They've shown, whether it was preseason, now regular season, and they've gotten down, they've stuck together, and they've come back and won when they really got behind.
Jim, we're going to end this interview full circle with honesty. Did you know everything that Derek Taylor has told you in this interview?
Absolutely not.
Yes,
Jim. Perfect way to end it. Thank you so much. Good luck tonight, Argonauts against the Blue Bombers, sir.
I appreciate it. You guys have a great night. Thanks for having me on.
The Argos miss a tackle every 13.8 attempts.
So 13.2. Check your numbers there, buddy.
Wow.
It is time now for today's Best Bets, brought to you by ProLine. First up, Gold Cup action. Yes, the world of soccer. I like Mexico over Jamaica. Why? Because Derek Taylor said Mexico wants to win. Take Mexico. I like Honduras and Canada. I think they will play to a tie. And I'll give you the score. 1-1. Spoiler alert. That's going to be it. Finally, the final CFL game of the schedule has been released. I like BC, the Lions, as a visitor plus at Hamilton. $20 pays you $168. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. And you can get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game. Derek, we got about a minute and 10 seconds. Am I winning my ProLine bet?
I think you're asking, are we winning?
Are we winning
your ProLine bet? Because I would lay 20 bones on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mexico in a tournament like that, when they want to win a game, and this is game two for them, mm-hmm. they're going to win. There's a reason and they put the U.S., Canada, and Mexico in separate groups in an event like that.
Nice.
Mexico is the man.
So you like this, so you like this.
And I like the draw for Canada.
So do I.
I like the draw for Canada. I like that pick for you a lot.
Yeah.
And BC going to roll.
Did it seem like I knew what I was talking about when I said, yes, I also like Canada's draw?
It didn't, but you didn't have to out yourself quite like that.
You know what? I am all for honesty when it comes when it comes to doing this job. We are basically out of time, my friend. Another fun show. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. I'm going to race across to the CFL pregame show and unveil the details on SJ Green before the Argos Bombers, which, if I'm not mistaken, will also be right here on TSN 1050.
That's right. Right after we're done, and we'll talk about that tomorrow. Jay taking on the Tigers, Wimbledon, and here's one sort of big picture question for the show tomorrow. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, former Calgary Stampeder. There's been a group that has formally filed a petition to draft him to be a presidential candidate for 2020. What athletes would you like to see? What athlete would you want as your next president or prime minister of Canada? I threw that question out today. We had no time, so we will pick on that up tomorrow. Fantastic job again, Derek. Thanks to everyone behind the glass. You have listened to Overdrive right here on TSN 1050.